You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tonight after 7, it's True Stories Told Live on the Moth Radio Hour. In this special episode celebrating fathers, a man embraces his father's music, a new dad has a breakdown in the grocery store, a young father struggles with his emotions, and an uncle steps in to play an important role. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
First, the Washington Post reported last night that special counsel Robert Mueller is investigating President Trump to see whether he obstructed the ongoing Russia investigation.
Officials told the Post that Trump is under federal investigation for potentially attempting to obstruct justice. Special counsel Robert Mueller has been overseeing the probe into Russian meddling in the 2016 election. According to the report, Mueller plans to interview 3 senior intelligence officers.
Trump was told privately by former FBI Director James Comey that he was not under investigation. According to the Post, that changed after Comey was abruptly fired.
Barbara McQuaid joins us now to tell us more. She teaches at the University of Michigan Law School and was formerly U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan. She stepped down after Attorney General Jeff Sessions asked for her and 45 other U.S. attorneys' resignations. Barbara, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
How significant is this report that the investigation is looking into President Trump and concerns of obstruction of justice?
Well, it's a serious matter. I think it's not really surprising in light of what we've been learning in recent weeks when James Comey testified last week and talked about the facts known to him and made reference to this will be for Robert Mueller to determine. I think most of us probably concluded that there was an investigation underway, but I think now it's pretty clear that it is.
What is the standard that they'd have to meet to say, yes, this is in fact obstruction of justice?
Well, the elements of the offense are where someone corruptly acts to impede or obstruct an investigation. It has to be an official proceeding. And so the trickiest part of making one of those cases is demonstrating that word corruptly. You have to show that the person acted with a bad purpose or motive. And that can be tricky because, as a jury would be instructed, you can't read someone's mind. So you have to rely on all of the facts, what they said, what they did, so that you can draw reasonable inferences as to what their intent was.
And the firing of James Comey seems to be one of the big questions here, why the president fired him. We've seen the president's tweets used in recent court cases related to the travel ban. Would the president's statement that he was thinking of the Russia investigation while deciding to fire James Comey, is that something that could play into whether this is obstruction of justice?
It certainly could be a piece of evidence. I think it's admissible evidence as under the hearsay rules, a statement against interest. But I think it's one of the pieces that goes into this story. You know, I think the shifting explanations, as Jim Comey put it, for his termination, I think are one of the most important things. In the law, there's a phrase, consciousness of guilt. When you tell lots of different stories about what really happened, that could be consciousness of guilt, that you knew one thing was proper and something else wasn't. So the pretextual perhaps explanations that the reason for the termination at first was the handling of the Clinton email investigation and later coming out that it was in fact relating to the Russia investigation. I think all of that goes into the mix into trying to determine what was on the president's mind when he took this action.
According to these reports, the investigators want to talk to three different intelligence officials. What kind of things, again, given that we can't read their minds, but what kind of things do you think they're hoping to find out?
Well, there have been media reports that said that President Trump asked them, just as he asked Comey, if they could help to end the Flynn investigation. Now, they refused to answer those questions in front of Congress, but in front of a grand jury with a subpoena and potential for a compulsion order, they very well may and likely would answer those questions. So I think the kind of things he's going to want to find out is, can he either confirm or refute what Jim Comey had to say? And if they repeat what Jim Comey said, that is that President Trump asked them to see if they could persuade the FBI to end the Flynn investigation, then I think you no longer have what is being characterized as a he said situation. You now have a he said they said situation. If you have 3 or 4 different witnesses all telling the same story, then it becomes much more compelling.
In the hypothetical instance that Robert Mueller and his staff conclude that, yes, indeed, there was obstruction of justice, then what? They can't indict a president, or can they?
Well, it's not clear. It seems that the best source we have on this is some advisory opinions issued by the Justice Department, both during the Watergate era and during the era when President Clinton was under impeachment. It appears from those opinions that a sitting president cannot be indicted on the theory that it would interfere too much with his duties to lead the country. But the mechanism for ending the presidency is impeachment, so Robert Mueller could turn over a final report to the Justice Department, to the House Judiciary Committee, which would be the one with authority to begin impeachment proceedings, and the Senate would then be the decision maker. Now, here's the question. If he is removed from office, could you then indict him and charge him criminally, facing potential prison charges, after he leaves office, as long as the statute of limitations is not met? I would suggest that you can.
Talking to Barbara McQuaid from the University of Michigan Law School, former U.S. attorney, looking at the latest news on the investigation of Russian interference in the election, President Trump, obstruction of justice, and more. Barbara, Robert Mueller is in this job. Floated the idea of firing him. A friend of President Trump said the president was thinking of it. There's been reporting, but not solid. What would go into that? What would be the reaction if the president tried to fire Robert Mueller?
Well, it seems like it would be just a political nightmare for him, but I guess that hasn't stopped him from doing things before that he wants to do. You know, under the law, it appears that only the attorney general has the authority to appoint and terminate a special counsel. And to terminate requires just cause. So it appears that the president would have to direct the acting attorney general on this matter, who is Rod Rosenstein, to fire Robert Mueller. Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general, testified yesterday in front of Congress that he wouldn't do that unless he saw just cause. He's not aware of any. So it would seem unlikely. If Trump wanted to do it himself, then perhaps there could be some challenge. Now, it's only a regulation. It's not a statute. It's not a constitutional matter that says it's only the attorney general who could do it. So we could have a little legal battle on our hands to figure out whether he does or does not have authority to fire the special counsel.
This obstruction of justice investigation is just one slice of the overall investigation. I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the other elements. Russian interference in the election is where this all started. What kind of things are, and it seems like everybody agrees that this probably happened, what kind of things would they be investigating now?
Yeah, and this really is the thing that we should be most concerned about. Of course, it's very concerning if a president tried to obstruct that investigation. And if he did, that's what makes it such a serious matter, because we absolutely want to know if the Russians were interfering with our elections. That is the cornerstone of our democracy. So what are the kinds of things they're looking for? I would think direct cyber hacking. I've read some reports that there was no change in the outcome of ballots cast, but there may have been efforts to hack into voter registration databases, which could have had an impact on who was allowed to vote on election day. Certainly there was propaganda spread by sharing the private emails of members of the Clinton campaign and the DNC in attempts to discredit them and just create some chaos within that campaign. So those are things that they would look at. And then, of course, whether there was any collusion by anybody on the Trump campaign. You know, sometimes there are witting beneficiaries and sometimes they're unwitting. So it may be that members of the Trump campaign assisted, believing they were assisting in some financial matters, and unwittingly assisted in the campaign. So all of those things, I think, would be in the scope of what Robert Mueller is investigating.
We're talking to Barbara McQuaid, professor at the University of Michigan Law School, former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan, looking at the news that President Trump is reportedly under investigation for potentially obstructing justice.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think of Robert Mueller's decision to look into whether the president tried to obstruct justice? What do you expect to come out of it? And how do you think the president's decision to fire former FBI Director James Comey could be affecting this, if at all? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. We continue our conversation now with Barbara McQuaid, professor at the University of Michigan Law School, former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan, looking at the reported investigation of President Trump for possible obstruction of justice.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Tell us what you think of an investigation into whether the president tried to obstruct justice is a good idea. Does this change your opinion of the president? Why or why not? And does it change how you see the Russian involvement in the U.S. election? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll go right to our callers. Dennis is with us in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi. Okay. What also throws a monkey wrench into it, at least, is Jeff Sessions recused himself from the Russian interference investigation. But if Jeff Sessions would be the only one who would be allowed to fire Robert Mueller, how could Jeff Sessions fire Robert Mueller?
Dennis, thanks for the call. So it would actually be Rod Rosenstein acting as the Attorney General for this case. Do I have that right, Barbara?
Yes, so I think so. Because Attorney General Sessions recused himself from anything relating to either of the campaigns was the specific basis of the recusal. Because of that, it was Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein who appointed Robert Mueller as a special counsel, and he would be the one who has authority to fire him. So that's the person that we would look to. Now, if he was given an order by the president, you know, there have been some comparisons to the Saturday night massacre during Watergate, you know, we could see what happened then, where one official after another refused to execute the order and resigned. So you could see something like that, I suppose, because Rosenstein has said that he will not fire Mueller in the absence of just cause.
Thanks for that call. We'll go next to Chris with us in Pulaski. Chris, hi.
Well, I mean, it's a little related, I guess, but it is related. I'm confused on the Russians hacked in. So what did they hack into, and how could it even have affected the election, number one? And then, because that's Putin, all this stuff.
Chris, your line's breaking up a little bit, but the gist, I think I got, Barbara. What did the Russians really do, supposedly? What could they have done that actually affected the election?
Yeah, so what we do know, and what the intelligence agencies have confirmed, is that there were hacks into the Democratic National Committee, and John Podesta, who was a campaign chairman of Hillary Clinton. And you may recall, during the election, we saw these coming out in dribs and drabs in an effort to undermine that campaign. You know, that was an effort to sort of turn the electorate and sway voters. But the other question is, were there actual hacks into voting software? To date, there has been no finding that any votes were changed, but there has been some reporting that voter registration databases may have been hacked into. So, you know, you might have shown up at the polls and said, "Hi, I'm here to vote." And they might have said, "Sorry, you're not registered in this precinct," which could have accounted for low voter turnout.
Thanks for that call, Barbara. I wanted to ask about one more angle on this investigation. Possible financial crimes could fall into the scope either of the president or then candidate Trump himself, or people associated with his campaign. What could the mandate of this investigation include?
Yeah, it does seem clear that they are investigating financial matters. You know, Flynn allegedly accepted funds. It was involved in some financial transactions with not only the government of Russia, but the government of Turkey. Paul Manafort was a lobbyist for Russia. So there could be looking at some of those kinds of things to see if anybody there's a crime to be acting as an agent of a foreign government without notifying the United States government of that activity. So that could be a crime. I noticed when James Comey was testifying, he was asked about this Russian bank called VEB and what he knows about it. And he says, "Well, all I can tell you in this setting is that it exists." But it certainly suggested that he knew more that he could not discuss in an open setting. So I'm sure there's going to be investigation into that. There's been some reporting that Jared Kushner has ties to that bank. And so I would imagine that all of those things would be within the scope of the special counsel's investigation.
Now, the basis for our conversation today is the report that the special counsel is investigating the president himself. We're not technically, I think, supposed to know that. Something got leaked somewhere. Trump supporters and his personal attorney are pointing attention to that. How much should we be worried about leaks coming out of this investigation?
Leaks are a very serious thing. You know, leak is a term that is used, I think, more in the media and by lay people. It's not a legal term. So there are leaks, and there are leaks. Someone who talks about something that's going on is one thing. The things that we really should be concerned about are the disclosure of classified information. That's a very serious matter, and there has been reporting about a foreign intelligence warrant that intercepted the communications of Carter Page, who was working on the Trump campaign. The fact that that's been disclosed in the media, to me, is a very serious matter. And if someone were caught doing that, that could be grounds for criminal prosecution. But other things, sharing information with the press about what's happening within your organization, may be poor form. It may be not permitted under the rules of the office, but is not criminal per se.
And it's not clear from the Washington Post report. It looks like it may be information not from the special counsel's office, but from people in agencies associated with people who are being interviewed, kind of trying to read between the lines there. But does that matter who the leak comes from in this instance?
It does. Under the grand jury secrecy rules, attorneys for the government are not permitted to share grand jury material, and that would include the entire prosecution team, so including the FBI agents. And you can be held in contempt of the grand jury with criminal penalties for disclosing anything about matters coming before the grand jury. But those rules don't apply to witnesses called before the grand jury. And so oftentimes I've been involved in these situations where there were so-called grand jury leaks, and everyone starts pointing to the prosecutors and the FBI, who, believe me, are the last people who want this stuff to come out because they don't want anything to undermine the integrity of their investigation. They don't want people knowing what they're doing until they're done. But the witnesses or people who know the witnesses or people who have seen these subpoenas may be the sources of those leaks.
We'll leave it there for now. Barbara, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
We've been talking to Barbara McQuaid. She teaches at the University of Michigan Law School. She was formerly a U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of Michigan. She joined us to look at news of President Trump reportedly being under investigation for obstruction of justice by Special Counsel Robert Mueller.
We're happy to report that Wisconsin Public Radio talk show host Larry Mueller is being inducted into the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association Hall of Fame today. The award honors his 50-year career at WPR.
Over the decades, listeners have appreciated his insatiable curiosity and smiled along with his infectious laugh heard every weekday here on the Ideas Network. Our colleague Kate Archer-Kent talked to Larry about being the station's longest-serving host.
Let's go back to where your career started on the air. It's 1967. We're in the throes of the Vietnam War. Lyndon B. Johnson is president. And how does your radio career unfold in 1967?
Well, I was a graduate student in the Department of Agricultural Journalism. Actually, I was an undergraduate student. And I took a course in radio from Maury White in my senior year. Maury was going to Colorado for the summer and needed someone to do his half-hour radio show. So he said, how would you like to go on for a master's degree? And then you could do my radio show for me and get your master's, and I didn't have any job prospects. So I said, well, that sounds interesting. Sounds like a good idea.
A decade goes by, and you have this new program, Wisconsin Here and Now, and you started taking callers in 1978. Do you remember that first call?
I had two veterinarians on, and I'm wondering if anybody's going to call. Grace Pearson, who subsequently, later, she called many, many times. She was from Stevens Point, Wisconsin. And I'm waiting for that question, and she says, how do I tell if my cat is a male or a female? And the vet said, well, you pick up its tail. That was the first question. And we're kind of off and running from there and just having a lot of fun, but I think also getting a lot of pretty good information out to people.
You've been described as the friendly host who has kitchen table conversations. Do you see yourself that way?
Yeah, I think so. I'm more or less off air the way I am on the air. I'm curious about things. I don't think I'm pretentious at all. I, you know, was raised to be respectful to people, and I think I'm respectful to my audience.
Did you receive some good advice along the way that's stuck with you?
Be prepared. Once, a long time ago, I was interviewing a person who was supposed to talk about how to deal with stress. And so I had read some things on it beforehand, and she was quite good beforehand. We got her in the studio, and then I asked her the first question, and she kind of stressed out herself, and her mouth opened, and nothing came out. So I said, you know, before you answer that question, let me take a crack at that. And so I answered my own question, and then I asked her another one, and I actually answered that one. And then somebody had already called and asked a question, and I sort of answered their question. And at that point, something came, you know, something finally clicked with her, and, you know, then she was fine the rest of the show. And I got a lot of mail on it, and the gist of every one of the comments was, why don't you let your guests do the talking? Why are you asking, answering those questions?
You can't win, Larry.
But it's, you know, it does go to being prepared.
How have you given back and left your mark in broadcasting?
I've been able to pass on a lot of great information, not things that I necessarily knew, but what my guests knew, to people. And I think my goal has always been to have fun and have our listeners have fun, but also have them learn something. And I think of anything I've done, I think I've been able to pass on a fair amount of learning.
Larry Mueller had a whole lot more to say to Kate, if you can imagine, about attending a one-room schoolhouse, hosting Santa and his elves on his show, and where he learned so much about gardening. You can find the extended interview over at WPR.org.
Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, a guest makes the case that Wisconsin dairy policies favor large-scale livestock operations at the expense of smaller farms.
We'll check out the news that Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman is not seeking re-election next year as part of our weekly roundup of some of the top news stories from around Wisconsin.
And on Food Friday, from toast to guacamole and beyond, we'll cook with one of my favorite ingredients that I didn't know was quite so versatile as it turns out to be, the lovely and green avocado.
And hopefully we'll get some avocado safety tips along the way. There have been issues. There have been issues out there when it
avocado
comes to
hand.
Avocados. That's coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.